bow down to the darkness? Or will you fight?
Hey, pretty baby, are you ready for me? Yeah, you good rockin' daddy down from Tennessee. I'm just out off about San Antonio with the radio blasting and the bird dog on. There's a big trap with my head sound of town. No local yoga gonna shut me down. Cause me and my boys got the trigger wound and we'll come a thousand miles from a guitar jam.
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown. I ain't kind of just hanging around. But I heard someone call my name one day and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far.
Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio, Liberty Lounge, every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern, right here on Survival Circle.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
But you can find it right here on the Shooting Bench. Coming up next.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down, places you don't talk about at parties. You want me on that wall.
You need the Shooting Bench.
We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline.
And I am sick of the lies and the deceit and the intrusions on my privacy and the invasion of my home. And we do not intend to take this lying down.
I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way.
And now, if you think you're ready, the Shooting Bench. Yeah, I think I'm ready. I think I'm about 10 minutes over ready. Welcome to the Shooting Bench, 7th of... What month is this now? September? Wow. And it's a Wednesday. I'm thinking, I forgot to call Doc earlier, but Doc, I think he'll see you in the chat room. If you're still up for our topic there in the second hour, well, I'm game if you are. If not, I've got plenty to talk about, so it's up to you. Looks like our classes in Snowflake are going to be a go. We've got confirmations on those tonight, and or earlier today anyway. And our class in Moriarty, New Mexico, is a go on the 23rd, 24th, and 25th of this month. The classes in Snowflake are on the 16th. One from 8 to noon. The other one from 1 to 5. They are covering disaster communications and community emergency response. So that'll be a pretty fun class. Ton of stuff going on. I miss doing the show every day. In some way, I do like having these couple of days off. It's all right. But I do miss doing the show every day because there are just so many things happening so fast. So we'll try to go through some of those and see what we can do. Obviously, I'm having a lot of very serious problems with my computer here lately. Don't be surprised if it wakes up dead here one of these days and we're going to be out of commission for a little while until we can figure out how to get another one. So I've got a desktop in here that's practically new, so I may go ahead and get everything transferred over to that so we can continue on with a seamless change of hands here. I was looking at some of the stories, some of the newer stories that came in today, and there's a lot of very surprising stuff to me. New Mexico public schools, it appears, are soon to be outfitted with shotguns and AR-15s. That sounds like pretty rough school to me. Now, it's just surprising to me because being from New Mexico and spending so much time there and teaching so many classes and stuff there, it's, it's odd because it's a fourth degree felony to carry, a fourth degree felony to have a gun on school grounds in New Mexico. Or in schools, I'm not sure about parking lots and stuff, but I think it covers parking lots too, I don't remember. But nevertheless, it's a fourth degree felony if you go in the school with a gun. They have been adamant about keeping guns out of schools there, even for licensed carry holders. Why not? There are no provisions for doing that. So, this kind of surprised me that they've got this new deal with the AR-15s and shotguns. Now, not that I think it's a bad thing. It just surprises me. This is Los Alamos. Los Alamos is a little town up... it's north of Albuquerque, if I recall. Yeah, it's way north of Albuquerque, as a matter of fact. It's almost to the Colorado border. They've approved plans to add gun safes stocked with shotguns and AR-15 to the middle school and high school campus. Interesting. The chief said the school resource officers already carry weapons, but they simply want a secure means to store additional firearms at school to be used primarily in the event of an active shooter situation. And that's not an altogether bad idea. Of course, I'd like to see this in addition to having it legal for concealed carry holders to carry in schools, obviously. But this is probably next best thing. If somebody shows up, or, you know, if it's bad enough, I don't know if... Excuse me, doggone it. I think there's a bone in that water I'm drinking there. If situation got bad enough, I wonder if there are provisions there for allowing someone who is can demonstrate or at least convince the resource officer there, yes, I'm trained, yes, I know what I'm doing, yes, I'm here to help, yes, I'm better than you are, give me one of those guns and we'll get this problem resolved. So I don't know if there's anything in the law or in the policies or whatever to allow something like that. It says even the 2 minutes it would take to get there and back, lives are potentially being lost. So to have more of a quick access that's left in a secure fashion would only be taken out during the most extreme situations. Well, that makes sense. I don't think that's a bad idea. So we'll let you know if they put those in there and then everybody winds up dead the next day, so it's always a possibility. That's what they seem to think. The classes are as follows. In Moriarty, I'll be there 23rd, 24th, and 25th for a personal defense handgun 2 and 3. This is the third time that we've done this, where we've allowed people to take the first 2 days and leave. Or if they take the first 2 days and they get all excited and they love it and they want to stay, then they can pay a little extra and take the night shoot and the third day. The communications class is going to be in Snowflake, Arizona that's on the 16th of this month. And, from 8 to noon and then from 1 to 5 will be the community emergency response class. So that's what we've got going on. 23rd, 24th, and 25th in New Mexico, their radio doc. See if I can get these. I have to fish all these out again since my computer decided that it wanted to go on strike there about the time the show started. Seems to happen fairly regularly in here lately. In Polk County, Florida, these guys weren't too smart. They're a very distinctive truck. Run in there and stole 40 guns from a Florida gun shop. The vehicle they were driving, now it could have been stolen too, so I guess it's really not that big a deal. If it was stolen, then they may have ditched it and got another car and went on their way. But it's happened about 3 o'clock in the morning, a place called Titan Arms. They got the truck on security cameras. They broke the metal bars and smashed a window and got in there, grabbed about 30 handguns and 10 different types of rifles, and disappeared. One guy sat in the truck and waited for the rest of them, and I guess there was 3 of them altogether, so one sat in the truck and 2 of them run in and grabbed the stuff. And they described the truck as a 2009 to a 2014 gray Ford F-150 extended cab with chrome wheels and bumpers. Bumpers. Huh, that's an odd thing to find on a truck. Maybe they mean chrome wheels and chrome bumpers. I think that's what they mean. The front grille is the horizontal slat style, and the bed has a black cover. So that ought to narrow it down a little bit there. And that's not the only one. That's not the only smash and grab that happened here. I've got another one. If you'll give me, here we go. This one was in Minnesota. Got twice as many guns. Listen to this. Talk about smash and grab. This reminds me of when they got the gun shop there in New Mexico in Farmington at the, I forgot what the name of it was now. It wasn't mine and it wasn't East Main Pond. It was, what's the other one, guys? Radio Doc C7, you guys ought to remember the one that they broke into here a while back. I don't know why I can't remember. What a brain fart. I was good friends with the guy that run it. But anyway, 80 guns taken in 60 seconds. These guys had this all worked out pretty good. Searching for 3 guys again, early morning break in Millville, Minnesota. They broke in there about 5 o'clock in the morning. That's a little late. I would not be inclined to do that at 5 o'clock. Somewhere between around 3 or 4 would be ideal. 5 o'clock's pushing it, I think. People getting up and moving around a little more. Let's see. Millville Gun and Rod Shop. Usually it's Rod and Gun. But Millville Gun and Rod Shop. His wife getting ready for work. I guess they lived in or near the building. They opened the garage. Daughter opened the garage. The first thing that somebody was getting was tampering with her car. Then she heard the glass shatter and realized that the gun shop, which is connected to the home, was being broken into. She said somebody broke into the gun shop. So I grabbed my gun and come running out, and they were already gone. So in the length of time that she figured this out, ran into the house, let everybody know, he grabbed a gun, come out, they were already finished. 80 guns. The surveillance video showed them, at least one of whom was armed with a gun before the break-in, spent about 45 minutes on the outside of the store before getting in. It appeared like the blowtorch was used to melt the phone and cable wires. It looks like it would have been a lot easier just take a pair of pliers. Then the bars on the windows and doors were targeted. Once the bars were broken, 2 of the suspects were seen busting through the front door while the 3rd kept watch outside, all the while armed with a gun. They didn't care if anybody seen them or not. They were ready for a firefight. They stuffed a backpack full of ammunition while the 2nd guy grabbed guns off the wall and out of the glass display cases that he smashed without hesitation. This guy takes his elbow, busts through the glass, starts grabbing handguns out by the handful. Altogether, the suspects only spent a minute inside the shop. Some 60 to 80 firearms were initially thought to be stolen. Said he compared, Sunday was still comparing his catalog of roughly 1,000 firearms to his remaining free inventory to count his losses. But by Monday, the count was at 86, with an estimated value of about $40,000. That's an estimated value of $40,000, what it's going to cost him probably to replace them. On the street, you may find that they're, you know, you take a hot gun that's not registered to you, those guns are worth a pretty penny. So they may be worth, you know, twice that or more out on the street. So it's a two of these basically in the same weekend. I didn't look at the dates here, but it's interesting that this is happening the way it is right now. The deal up in on the Sioux Reservation is getting a little bit out of hand. They've turned dogs loose on these people. Not turned them loose, I guess, but they have bitten, I think they said they bit 30 people at one time here, including some kids, put some people in hospital. Yeah, at least, 30 people were pepper sprayed, 6 people bitten by the dogs, including a kid. And these Indians are adamant that they don't want anybody helping up here. Yeah, DeTinker, that may be exactly what it is, getting ready for the start of the party here. That may be exactly what's going on. But these Indians don't want anybody helping them. They've turned down, unless you're another Indian tribe. There's several militias that have offered to come up here and stand with them. And they won't hear of it. And they insist on everybody being unarmed. Now, that's good and bad. It's bad because if the jackbooted thugs elect to open fire, there's going to be another wounded knee going on there and no way to fight back. I can't imagine that there's not at least some guns in the in the vehicles and stuff of some of these people, but probably not near the ones. Going to take them a little while to get to them, and probably not everything that they need, and probably not enough of them. So I'm a little surprised at that whole thing as to why they're doing it this way. But at one time, and this may still be true, I don't know, but at one time there was word out that they didn't want any white people helping them. Now, I don't know if that was true or not, but from what it looks like, it's pretty much appears to be about 100% Indians up there. So, and God bless them, if they can stand and make their point and everything, then that's I have no problem with that. I do have a little bit of heartburn over them not wanting others to come help, though. That kind of pisses me off. It would be, I can kind of see their point for being unarmed. There is there's a way to, yeah, Tinker, I don't know. If they start shooting unarmed people there, yeah, there that could be a little bighorn. It may be, you know, if that starts happening, there may be a bunch of people respond whether the Indians want them to or not. But that would be my guess, my hope, anyway. So I don't know what's going to happen. Being unarmed, if some of them are shot, I think it would be a little bit more difficult for security operatives there or the government to justify shooting if there's no guns in sight. Where they, that was the first words out of their mouth when they murdered Lavoie, was that he was reaching for a gun, which made it sound like they were at least somewhat justified in what they did. So, it could be that going unarmed may be the better way to do it. I don't know. We'll find out here. There's additional news that should be coming out here in the next very few days that I can't share with you at the present time, but I think you'll find it very interesting. I just have to get the go ahead here later on to release that. So, but Believe me, the people that listen to the Shooting Bench will be the very first in the nation to hear this news. Trying to read the chat room, keep up with all my... You know, some of the problems that may be with this computer, and it happened to me before, is I downloaded Chrome back on here again. And you'd think I would learn, but I really needed this for a specific purpose. But you'd think I would learn, because the last two times I put it on there, it completely screwed my computer up. So I'm not sure right now if this is if that's what's doing it or not. If it is, unfortunately, I'm probably going to have to get rid of it again, which I dearly hate to do because I really need it for something. But anyway, I guess we'll find out. You know, we've talked numerous times about different means of secure communication. We talked about different programs. And one thing that I never talked to you about, and this is why right here, because I don't just tell you, you know, try this, try this, try this. These all claim to be secure. I only use the ones that I am confident, as confident as reasonably can be, that are secure. One of those, and people have fought me tooth and nail over this, is an app called WhatsApp. WhatsApp. And people have been using it. But the FTC now, there's been a complaint filed over them sharing user data with Facebook. Yeah, there's security for you. There's been two different groups. And this is why, you know, this is why you watch these other groups. You don't just listen to what other people say, and you don't just make these decisions on your own. There's a lot of groups out there that are, you know, watching things in our best interest. We have people in our own group that do this stuff for us, that are pretty tuned up high speed cotton pickers. So anyway, there's two different groups here, two privacy watchdog groups have filed a formal complaint with the FTC, with the Federal Trade Commission, in response to their WhatsApp's announcement last week that they would start sharing user data with their parent company, which is Facebook. Unbelievable. And I've talked to a couple of people that I'm close to that I've been trying to talk out of using WhatsApp for the last 3 or 4 months, and they haven't done it, and I sent this, and they're done. They're going to be getting out of it, getting into something I suggested a long time ago, tomorrow. So if you're currently using WhatsApp, then you might consider doing something different. There are some other good programs out there. Okay, let me see here. Let me read a little bit more of this and give you a little bit more information here. The two groups also highlight their complaint filed originally in 2014 after Facebook acquired WhatsApp for $22 billion, where they said WhatsApp built a user base based on its commitment not to collect user data for advertising revenue. Why would you use WhatsApp, Kilogram? Well, up until the last few days, you would use it for secure communications. But I think they found out that it's not as secure as they thought it was. Acting in reliance on WhatsApp's representations, internet users provided detailed personal information to the company, including private text to close friends. Facebook routinely makes use of user information for advertising purposes and has made clear its intent that it intends to incorporate the data of WhatsApp users into the user profiling business model. The proposed acquisition will therefore violate WhatsApp. Okay, yeah, that's this whole thing is absurd to me. So if any of you are using that, then you need to get off of it. Yes, Kilogram, there are several things out there that are quite secure over the Internet. The Internet itself doesn't make it unsecure. There's lots of encrypted things out there, lots of encrypted programs that are exceedingly secure. This just doesn't happen to be one of them. A lot of people thought it was, but it's over and done with now. All right. Well, due to the delay in getting started, I'm still a little bit behind on getting some of my other stuff done here. So we're going to take about a 5 minute or so break here and get caught up, and I'll be back.
Criminals prefer an unarmed public. Our nation's worst crime statistics and most horrific recent events have taken place in areas that are known to be no-carry zones for law-abiding citizens. There's a reason schools make such good targets for gun violence. Only the criminal will be armed.
I had to chuckle because then I noticed he had Mr. Brady up here who was hit not with an assault weapon but with a .22 caliber revolver. So getting beyond that.
It's about the weapons, the guns. Where did the killer get them?
They're shocked at how easy it is to purchase a gun.
It is simply too easy to obtain a firearm.
While the gun is considered an instrument of war by many, to me, it is clearly an instrument of peace and of liberty. The gun promotes peace in the hands of peaceful people. The gun has no mind of its own, it has no morals, and it has no conscience. In the same moment that the gun takes a life, it can be saving one and not be able to distinguish the difference. The gun and its use, for good or for evil, is solely at the discretion of its bearer.
It took me a good 45 seconds to realize that this man wasn't there to commit a robbery. He wasn't there for a hit. He was there to simply shoot as many people as he possibly could.
The gun levels the playing field when confronted by larger men, armed men, multiple attackers, and tyrannical governments. The right of self-preservation, the right to possess that gun, was afforded me by my maker and is non-negotiable. It is not up for consideration or discussion by any man or group of men on this earth. The right to bear arms is what protects my other rights, and considering the source of that right, it cannot and will not be taken away or disguised as some watered-down compromise. There are a few rights that man is born with, and it has been that way since the dawn of time. The Constitution of the United States enumerates those rights for us, and the protection that it affords us is comforting. However, the Constitution has been ignored, gagged, whisked away to an office full of men that have taken pleasure in violating her, leaving her torn and bleeding, unable to help herself. People that were appointed stewards over her have been neglectful. They have been lured into complacency and have inadvertently turned a blind eye towards this criminal act. We, the people, have been distracted. We were promised safety and protection by the very men that have perpetrated this vile deed. Without the support and protection of free men, dedicated, patriotic Americans, the Constitution is truly nothing more than a piece of paper.
Remember real clear years ago in the swamps of South Georgia? Cane pole and crossman in my hands, all I needed to be growed up. Homemade ice cream and barbecue and the family on Friday nights. 10-lane ramp on Saturday, right before the morning light. Came a time, eyes opened up, and I learned about the gun.
tool that keeps all men free.
We have a message for those that would take our guns away, whomever they may be, from whatever country, whatever unconstitutional faction they may belong to. Please understand that we have had everything taken from us that we are willing to surrender. Some of us have been shooting since before many of you were born. Many of us were trained by the same people that trained you. And some of us, through years of experience, know tricks that they haven't taught you yet. Think of your families and your future with them as we have done. We have decided that our future and that of our children cannot and will not be without freedom. We are willing to die to defend those God-given rights if need be. The question that each of you must ask yourselves, are you willing to die to take them away?
From Hillary Clinton, from Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, from a whole gaggle of numbnuts who would try to tell me they will dictate where, how, and if I can defend myself. I find that preposterous. I find it unacceptable, and I will not accept it. I am a free man. Don't tread on me.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, let's get back with it here. I think I got things organized a little bit better. This is a one of those happy ending stories. Happened in Kuna, I guess, it's Idaho, right outside of Boise. 14-year-old boy wanted for a recent. This is not a happy story. The next one. 14-year-old boy wanted for a recent arson, shot and killed himself Friday during a standoff with police. This was a week ago. Suspect in July fire that destroyed two storage units belonging to a church-ran thrift shop. Prior to the standoff, teen stole two handguns from a family member, barricaded himself inside a friend's house. And anyway, as it wound up, the negotiation didn't work, and he shot himself. And let's see. Where was one? There we go. Here's one I was looking for. Richmond County Sheriff's Office confirmed Thursday that the woman who shot and killed a suspect during a robbery in Augusta, Georgia subway restaurant will not face any charges. Attempted robbery occurred about 12:30 p.m. Female clerk was working alone, but her 14-year-old son was in the sandwich shop with her when two suspects entered. One suspect immediately went to the restroom while the other paced at the front of the business. Both were reportedly carrying crowbars. So you walk into a place with no telling what intentions, carrying a crowbar. One of them goes to the bathroom. The other one walking around outside. I'm just carrying this here crowbar. I just carry it on account of
I like this crowbar. I'm just going to tote it around here. So the second suspect then started to ask the clerk about the Atlanta area and ask if she had a car jack. She told police that it made her nervous, so she walked to the back room to get her handgun from her purse. As soon as she did that, one of the suspects ordered the 14-year-old boy to also go to the back of the store, while the second one jumped over the counter. At some point, one of the suspects struck the teen over the head with a crowbar. The boy was injured, and his mother fired 3 shots at the suspect, striking 1. Both of them fled on foot, but responding officers later found 24-year-old Cornelius Harrison of Greensboro, North Carolina, laying in the nearby wooded area. He'd been shot in the torso and was transported to the hospital, where he later died. Good for him. Good for mom. The 14-year-old is also taken to the hospital, condition unknown. Second suspect was apprehended the following day. Well, good for them. All right, a little more to the story, but that's the crux of it there. One of those things. Hey, Radio Doc, come on down. Come on down here and go to show. What do you mean, C7, you're going to go to Texas? No. Yakima Gluck has an iron deficiency. That's why he carries his crowbar. He sits around and chews on it when he feels the urge to up his iron intake a little bit. Well, this guy here, I guess, felt an urge to get his lead intake up a little bit. Evidently, he overdosed on it, so he found him dead. Oh, excuse me. Found him dead in the woods there a little ways away. So one of those things, I guess. There's been, this is in Kentucky. Now, they've seen a little bit of this down on the Mexican border, too, Arizona and Texas. But not that it's really made the news. This, however, because of the number of them, the BATF has warned that 12 improvised explosive devices, IEDs, have been found in a wooded area in Harlan County, Kentucky. They said these devices were found along a drainage area. In at least 3 of the incidents, the devices were found inside trail cameras and were designed in such a way that they would trigger when batteries were inserted. Now, that's a little scary. So you find a trail camera out there on a tree. It's not being attended. Somebody takes it home and said, oh boy, I got me a new trail cam here. All I need to do is put batteries in it, and it's ready to go. So you hook the batteries up, and boom. That brings a whole new meaning there to booby trap, I think. In some instances, other items such as paint cans were found in the area, and a tree stand has reportedly been booby-trapped as well. Now, I wonder if these were anti-hunting people or something worse. The IED started popping up back in as far back as March, and authorities have been on the lookout all summer. Joint investigation by federal and local agencies. Let's see, after a device utilizing a Winchester 9mm shell casing with an unknown explosive material and a detonator blew several fingers off a local man the month prior. Some of the components have been hot glued together. So, the takeaway lesson here, and we've done a little bit of this in some of our exercises by getting the guys all intent and interested in what was going on, you know, in a particular type of training, whether it was land nav or just patrolling or something, and put something out there on the trail that they just couldn't resist. picking up or kicking with their foot, turn it over and see, you know, see what it was. And it works every time. And I remember that one of the best ones we had a, I may have told you guys this story. I don't remember. We were up in, over west of, or east of Gallup, New Mexico, a little ways out in the mountains there, and doing an exercise. And I think it was, yeah, that's where it was. And, I'd gone way ahead and put targets up in, you know, trees and stuff, you know, to let people know they were supposed to have a count of all of these when they came back and let us know, you know, what was going on out there. The counts were dismally low. But anyway, we had one guy in the bunch that was an avid, absolutely... more than avid, he was a fanatic about hunting. I mean, you start talking about deer and deer horns and stuff, and he just drops everything, and he's on it. So, in the course of following this trail, I found a really nice half, you know, one side of a mule deer rack, really nice, laying right beside the trail there. Well, I was off, you know, 20 feet or so when I found it. But anyway, I moved it over within a couple of feet of the trail and rigged it up to a bottle, I think it was, a bottle or a rock or something, put a little wire on it and run it up over a tree limb and fix it where if you move the horns at all, then the, you know, the rock would fall out and make some noise. And sure enough, perfect, blew them all up. I guess the idea here is for all of us as we spend time in the woods this coming fall and probably from now on, I think we should exercise exceptional caution about things we do, things we pick up, things we see, run over, kick out of the way. Things like that, it could be something very serious. You know, the deer horn thing was funny, but it worked. You know, it got the point across. When you're out on these kind of deals, it's like there were similar things happening. I know everybody here has seen the original Red Dawn. You know, and how they set up some booby traps and stuff in there. So I would be a little extra cautious out there. Doc, I'm inclined to think the same thing. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what that was. So anyway, let's see here. Oh, I tell you something else. I've got something I'm going to try to do to help with this computer. I've started moving a bunch of shows off and putting them on flash drives and CDs and stuff. And I'm thinking that I may have a deal that will help to fund a new computer and get some... our donation button there is very rarely used, so... I'm going to see if I can offer a little bit more. I'm going to have a deal here if it works, and I'm going to find out tomorrow if it works. I'm going to have close to 1,000 shows. It's hard to believe we've done that many, but we've done way more than that. I'm going to have close to 1,000 shows on one 32-gig hard drive, a flash drive. And... what I'm going to charge for them yet, I'm not sure, but I'm thinking about $100. This is going to be, what is that, a dime a show? And this is every show that we've done from, let's see here. It was sometime early 2011. I didn't go back and try to dig up all the ones from 2010 and all that right now. We'll see how it goes. I may, if it works out okay, I may wind up putting a little over 1,000 shows on it. We're talking about 1,000 full episodes of, and these are mostly all 2-hour shows, the biggest part of them. And for a dime a show. So we'll see how that works out. This is something that you can take and just plug into the deal in your car or on your computer or whatever and listen to Shooting Benches for archives from way back, for a long time. I don't know if that's appealing to anybody or not, but I come up with that idea tonight. Thought it might be a good way to help finance some of this stuff. So. Okay, well, let me get back here. We'll do another story or two, and then Doc and I have another topic for you that we're going to share with you that we thought might be of some interest. I know it's some of interest to some of you because I've heard some people actually talk about doing this. So we're going to give you our take on it here. You know, there's a new book out by John Lott Jr. Shows that, and I'm not sure I believe all this. Radio Doc, no, it won't go back that far. I do have some of those, though. I'll have to see if I can gather some of them up. But I do have quite a few of those. I'll see if I can get them and burn some more and offer those too. But yeah, I've got quite a few of them back from 1390 radio days. I don't know about most of them, but I've got a lot. Got quite a few. Let's see. This new book he's got on says that from 1950 to 1950 to 2010, not one mass shooting took place in an area where citizens could arm themselves in self-defense. Now that may be true, but I got to do some checking. I find that awfully hard to believe. C7, I definitely have. Well, I say definitely. I'm 90% sure that I've got my interviews with Susana Martinez. I think we did at least two of them with her, with the now governor of New Mexico. There is a ton of stuff. 1,000 shows. Now, I haven't got an exact count, but it's real close to 1,000. And if it will work, I've got a couple of different ways I might go. We've got probably well over 2,500 shows archived. And I've got to get some of that stuff off of this computer, and that may help. It may be just full. I don't know. All right. I found this story to be rather interesting. According to him, he says from 1950 to 2010, not one single mass shooting happened in any area where the general civilians are allowed to carry guns. Over the entire period from 1950 through February of 2016, just over 1% of mass public shooting occurred in such places. So think about that for a minute. From 1950 to January of this year, just over 1% of mass shootings occurred outside of gun-free zones. Mountain Shooter, I've already got them downloaded, brother. All I got to do is copy these drives now. It didn't take long at all. And there's a percentage of people here that thinks John Lott is just making this stuff up as he goes along, so he makes sure and provide documentation in this book. I'm going to get one of these books. I'm going to check it out because, and not trying to prove him wrong at all. I mean, I'm a little bit skeptical about that, but nevertheless, I still want to see it, right, wrong, or indifferent. I think it could be a very interesting book to have. He said, for an example, a February 2016 wiretap of Khalil Abu Rayyan, a would-be attacker in Detroit, caught him admitting that he wanted to attack a church because people are not allowed to carry guns in church. Well, that may be true in Detroit, but not everywhere. Dylan Roof, the alleged gunman behind the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church, first planned to attack the College of Charleston, but switched plans and attacked the church after realizing the college had armed guards. Aurora Movie Theater gunman James Holmes used his diary to explain that he did not choose the closest theater or the biggest theater for his attack. Rather, he chose the gun-free theater. He selected the only theater within 20 minutes of his apartment that banned permitted concealed handguns. So that's going to be a great book. I'm going to get one here just as soon as check and research it a little bit to see if they're actually available yet. But if they are, I'll be having me one pretty shortly. We'll talk about it when I get done with it. So let's see here. Now, this has nothing to do with guns, yet. It has everything to do with liberty, freedom, and that kind of thing that nobody seems to care about too much anymore. Florida judge has ruled that people cannot grow vegetable gardens on their own property. Kind of weird reasons here. The village of Miami Shores, according to this ruling, has every right to take legal action against residents who dare to grow food in their own yards because they are ugly. The ruling has a whopping 10 pages long, as it was filled with legal analysis and definitions of what constitutes a vegetable. Please. Even though she ruled in favor of the ban, the judge acknowledged that she wasn't quite sure how a vegetable garden can ruin the aesthetics of one's property. However, she stated that the democratically elected government has every right to dictate what constitutes an ugly front yard, and gardens are apparently a contributing factor. Given the high degree of deference that must be given to the democratically elected government body, Miami Shore's ban on vegetable gardens outside of the backyard passes constitutional scrutiny. Oh, really? The court's decision was based on a 3-year-long legal battle of these two people here. They were facing a fine of $50 a day, not for robbing banks or trafficking people or selling drugs or any of that kind of stuff, but for growing their own food. For 17 years, the couple grew their own food in the front yard until one day, the state came knocking. No one was harmed by the couple's garden. It was entirely organic, and nearly 2 decades, not one of their neighbors ever complained. The only injured party in this was the state. According to the tyrannical legislation, all homeowners are subject to the same thing. Their yards must be covered in grass. That is the law. So, there you go. If you're up in that part of the country, then maybe that's probably certainly not a fundamental right to grow. You know, this I don't I don't get this at all. I don't understand this. It says, there certainly is not a fundamental right to grow vegetables in your own front yard. Now, why would there not be a constitutional, a fundamental right to grow vegetables in your own yard? This was an attorney that said this. Aesthetics and human uniformity are legitimate government purposes. Not every property can lawfully be used for every purpose. So there you have it. That's, well, there's more to this case, I mean, more to this story here. Says while this couple is upset over the ruling, they do not plan on backing down anytime soon. Good for them. I'm disappointed by today's ruling. My garden not only provided us with food, provided, like past tense, but it was also beautiful and added character to the community. I look forward to continuing this fight and ultimately winning so I can once again use my property productively instead of being forced to have a useless lawn. Okay, well, there you have it. Well, I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break here. When I come back, I'm going to get Doc in here with me. And we got a topic I think you guys will find some interest in. Hopefully it will help you make some decisions one way or another. So stand by. Be back in 4 or 5 minutes.
Used to love me, but she died. A chicken ain't chicken till it's licking good fried. Keep on the sunny side. My uncle used to love me, but she died. Who'll bid me quarter, 30 cents for a ring of keys, 365 for a dollar bill of groceries? I'll have me a car, my own someday, but till then I need me a ride. My uncle used to love me, but she died. My uncle used to love me, but she died. A chicken ain't chicken till it's licking good fried. Keep on a sunny side. My uncle used to love me, but she died. Hamburger, cup of coffee, lettuce, and tomato. Two times a dime to see a man kiss the alligator. One more time around free on the Ferris wheel ride. My uncle used to love me, but she died. My uncle used to love me, but she died. A chicken ain't chicken till it's licking good fried. Keep on a sunny side. My uncle used to love me, but she died. Apples are for eating and snakes are for hissing. I've heard about a hugging and I've heard about kissing. I read about it free in a 50-cent illustrated guide. My uncle used to love me, but she died. My uncle used to love me, but she died. A chicken ain't chicken till it's licking good fried. Keep on the sunny side. My uncle used to love me, but she died. Well, my uncle used to love me, but she died. A chicken ain't chicken till it's licking good fried.
Our baby Kate was born, it was the biggest day of my life. Lying there, little bows in her hair, in the loving arms of my wife. I was the proudest papa in the USA. Making a living on the road somewhere, 1,000 miles away. It was a happy day, but kind of sad. I wish I could have been there. I wish I could have been there. I wish I could have been there for that.
Bobby hit his first home run. He was the hero of the hometown crowd. 2-1, it was a winning run. Everybody was cheering loud. And Mama, she was smiling, saying, he's a chip off of the old block. But I was on the road somewhere between Memphis and Little Rock. It was a happy day, but kind of sad. I wish I could have been there. I wish I could have been there. I wish I could have been there for that. Now Bobby and Kate are all grown up. We're proud of the two good kids we raised. And it's hard to believe we're celebrating our 25th year today. This party's nice, but the kids aren't here. At least they call to say, congratulations, Mom and Dad. We could have been there. I wish we could have been there. I wish we could have been there for that. It was a happy day, but kind of sad. I wish they could have been there. I wish they could have been there. Wish they could have been there for that.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back, and obviously we're going to run over, well, I don't know how obvious it is, but we're going to run over our time just a little bit and make a full hour out of this. We'll run till about 10 after. And get this finished up. So I'm going to give Doc a holler here. I'm going to give him a ringy-dingy. I think he's ready to come enlighten us with his wisdom, which is vast. So hang on here and let's give him a call. All right, anytime now. Just go ahead. Let's give him a call. There we go. Stand by. I think it's going to work. I may be wrong. I thought I was wrong once, but I was mistaken.
Hello. So,
there
Good
he
evening,
is.
Cope.
There. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you fine.
All right. How are you tonight, Doc?
I'm good. I don't know how vast my wisdom is. I wish it was as vast as my girth. But...
Yeah, I know what you mean there. I've been a little concerned about that myself. So I'm gonna have to start working on. You know, I got to get some of that out of here. It's gonna be November here pretty quick. Thanksgiving and then Christmas, and New Year's, all these big feasts right in a row. So
absolutely,
I need to get a head start here. Or I'm gonna be in trouble.
Well, I think I told you, I've got LDS folks in my family, and I don't know if that's a Mormon tradition, but they usually put on quite a spread for the holidays.
Well, I don't know if it's a tradition or not, but it sure seems to happen that way, because you know, the overwhelming majority of people in my family and a lot of my friends are all LDS, and they get pretty damn wild with the feed when it comes time. There, nobody goes home hungry, I can guarantee you that.
Oh, yeah, and leftovers, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they just send people home with leftovers so they don't have to deal with them. Well, so, what's our topic tonight, Doc?
Well, I thought we could talk about violating firearms laws and making illegal weapons and the general stupidity of it.
That sounds like a good thing to talk about. So what's your take on that?
Well,
you're talking about hiding illegal weapons or obtaining them and saving them for a rainy day.
It's not that I don't necessarily sympathize with the spirit. I just take a more pragmatic approach to it.
Yeah.
I was reading a story on one of the forums I frequent. Several people here are familiar with it. I don't think I need to name it. But one of the posters was bemoaning the fact that his friend, who was a professional man, was arrested in Massachusetts with a pistol in his car. And as you know, and many of our listeners know, you have ridiculous laws in some states, especially mm-hmm. California and the Northeast. For instance, I think New Jersey makes it a felony for each round of hollow point pistol yep. ammunition that you possess.
Yeah, you don't even have to have a gun for it. You just got to have a round in your pocket and you're done.
And I think in Massachusetts, it's a felony to have the pistol in your car and the pistol ammunition and magazines in virtually every case. So there are a lot of things that I think are unconstitutional. I'm opposed to the laws, but you shouldn't set yourself up to get nailed for that kind of a thing.
No, I agree. There's, although I do think there's probably some ways to go about it. If someone were really, really had a hankering to do that, saving it up for a rainy day and were wanted to go to the trouble, if they had something that was unidentifiable and untraceable back to them and they put it in a, you know, an underground vault somewhere or something. But the other thing is, I'm not convinced that there's very many weapons out there that are illegal that are also that beneficial to have anyway.
Well, I agree completely. This is my pet peeve with illegal full auto weapons.
Yeah.
They, you know, if you look at modern military trends for individual soldiers' weaponry, small arms, the U.S. Army and several other countries have gotten away from full auto in recent years and decades. What you see now on the M4 is generally burst fire.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in a tactical context, I agree with. But, you know, I call it the Rambo phenomena. A lot of people think, oh, somehow if I only had a machine gun, I would be so much more effective.
Yeah.
And it's not true.
No, it's not.
So you set yourself up, if you want to do that, you set yourself up for a felony to no good end.
The only thing that that I can see as far as weapons that you might want would be a very short-barreled shotgun or a very short-barreled M4 or something. Not even fully automatic, just, you know, in the semi. The short barrel I can find a use for. The full auto, I can't. I do like to play with them. They're a lot of fun, but somebody has to feed those things.
Well, I've got a couple of points to bring up about that, and it brings to mind the Randy Weaver case of a couple of decades ago. Now, Cope, before I go any further, I'm getting a strong echo in my headphones. Are you hearing that, or is it that being transmitted to the audience?
No, I don't think so. I don't hear anything out of the normal on this end.
Okay, well, I can deal with it. I can understand you. I just don't want to impinge on our listeners' ears with it if it's annoying.
There's an anonymous there that hears echo, echo, echo. Oh.
Okay, well, Mountain Shooter says he's got his 5x5, and so does C7, so I'll just carry on. But if listeners remember the Randy Weaver case, he was entrapped, and an undercover agent paid him to illegally shorten a shotgun barrel, and I think it was something ridiculous, like by a half an inch.
Yeah, it was a quarter inch or half inch, something like that. Real stupid.
Now, as to your observation, well, here we disagree a little bit. I don't see much utility in short-barreled shotguns or rifles. However, if you need one, or you think you need one, 5 minutes with a hacksaw, or better yet, a couple of minutes with a lathe will accomplish that for you. So
right.
Why should you have the illegal weapon in your home just inviting a felony charge?
Oh no, I wouldn't want one in my home at all. If I was to do that at all, it would be out on National Forces property, buried, you know, somewhere.
But you understand what I'm saying.
Exactly.
If you absolutely decided to do that, you can do it in 5 minutes before the time of need. So why do it well in advance and have it in any way traceable to you? It's just asking for trouble.
Yep, I agree.
Now, as a side note, generally speaking, I don't like short-barreled weapons, long guns. And the reason is primarily twofold. It's accuracy and reduction of power. For one thing, I think the 14.5-inch barrel of the M4 was a mistake. I thought that when they first came out, and I still do. A little 223 round needs all the help it can get, and shortening that barrel does not help it in the power arena.
No. The only thing I would want one for, if I needed one for anything, would be for very close quarter stuff. Definitely not for out in the jungle or out in the woods. That just doesn't accomplish a thing.
And I mean, I don't dismiss the 223. I own several of them. I think they have their niche. I sure don't want to get hit by one, but objectively speaking, it's a very marginal cartridge when it comes to hunting larger game or human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I don't dismiss it, I want to make that little round as effective as possible, and shorter barrels don't do that.
Right. I agree. That's, if I think I would want to try to maybe move towards the heavy bullet idea there. If I had a short barrel, I would probably want to go with the heaviest bullets I could get. If I'm doing close range, you know, very close quarter stuff, I'd want to load that thing up with, you know, the 70 grain bullets or something like that. Try to make up for the lack of velocity with weight. I'm a big fan of the, you know, the 45-70 and big heavy bullets in handguns and stuff, where you can't have the velocity, the weight and
right.
Diameter helps make up for that.
And with shotguns, again, shotguns are basically close range weapons anyway, and by shortening the barrels, you just further diminish their utility. The only thing you really gain with a short barrel is concealability.
Right.
Yeah, you may gain a little maneuverability in CQB situations, but everything in life is a trade-off, and I think the shortening of the barrel is a bad trade-off, but more importantly, it's illegal, so don't do it. You know, especially like you said, having anything traceable to you. And I don't know many people in my circle of acquaintances who are made of money. So there are some other pragmatic considerations one should take into account. Once you illegally modify a weapon, you've essentially made it unsaleable.
Right.
And I look at every weapon I own as an investment. And I'm anal about having a bill of sale for every weapon I own.
Yes, sir.
So if it turns out that something was hot, you know, it was stolen somewhere down the road, I can prove, if it ever comes down to it, look, this is where I bought it from.
Yep, I agree. Not only do I believe in having bill of sales for them, I believe in having copies of the bill of sales scanned or pictures taken or something to put on a flash drive. So if the house burns down or something, there's a good chance I could have a backup for that later on.
And the other thing you alluded to earlier, I mean, we're talking about the game cameras that had been booby-trapped.
Yeah.
And I did read that story, and apparently it was a Muslim psychotherapist, a professional man, who was responsible for that and arrested for it.
Oh, really? I didn't see that part of it.
You made another reference to a fellow blowing his fingers off with some sort of improvised explosive.
Yeah.
And over, you know, my decades on this earth, I have generally been associated with what you would call seriously right-wing groups or conservative groups, and so peripherally you would hear about these sort of things from time to time. And it's just, it's bad mojo. There's no need for it. You know, like guys, you hear about these stories, the FBI or the ATF find somebody with a garage full of pipe bombs or improvised explosives. Again, you're setting yourself up to fail. Why even fool with those things? They're limited, if any, real tactical utility, and they're just like, hang the bait out there. Come arrest me. Come throw me in jail.
Yeah.
And the right-wing factions in this country, the libertarians, the conservatives, the Christian right, you're already a target. You're already on a bunch of lists. So why make it easy for them?
Yep. Can't argue with that any. It's, you know, and that I would go so far as to even say that, which is the same deal, but easier to hide, just having a particular modified sear or a part for the gun or something that turns it into full auto. I would say the same thing is not just don't have it. You know, it's just not the benefits of the full auto. There's not any benefits to full auto. If you're not out there with groups of people fighting groups of people, then you probably not going to need the suppressive fire effect of the full auto. And I'm not convinced he can't do that just as well with semi-auto anyway, and not panic and hold the trigger down until it, you know, in Vietnam, the number of rounds, I forgot what it was, but it was something like, I don't know, ungodly thousands of rounds per confirmed kill.
50,000, Cope.
Yeah, that's probably exactly right. And I think a lot of that was contributed to kids out there panicking, just holding the trigger down until the gun went empty.
In conventional Western military doctrine, full auto weapons are primarily a general purpose machine gun that are carried by a squad or a section, usually with one or two assistant gunners or ammo carriers. And that weapon is the primary offensive and defensive weapon of the squad. And the rest of the squad is essentially designed to support that weapon. I'm not aware of any conventional military use for a single man with a full automatic weapon.
Right. I agree. 100%. Couldn't agree more. It's always been where I've kind of been, you know, kind of been a little different from, you know, most everybody you talk to. You know, 90% of the guys that you talk to out there that are getting ready for poop hit the fan situation, the reset of the country, you know, the first thing they want to talk about is full auto weapons. And it just, I've just never had that. I had my fun with them when I was in Europe and everything, and that was cool as long as they was buying the ammo, but I've just never had a desire at all.
They can be a lot of fun to play with, and personally, on a constitutional basis, I don't think they should be illegal or taxed.
No, I don't either.
That's not the point of this conversation.
Right.
The point of the conversation is, you know, to try to convince people not to do stupid things that will get them in a lot of trouble to no good end. If that makes sense.
Yep, I agree. The Anonymous. Yep, the conversation does have a point, and I think we've made it more than once. But the idea here is I think the point of the conversation is twofold. One of them is the the practicality of using illegal weapons. It's particularly fully automatic. The other thing is the practicality of trying to hide them and keep them out of sight, out of mind, taking that risk versus reward thing. If you get caught with that, you're going to be able to go and stay with Clive and Bundy and them for the next 95 years or whatever it is.
And you will have not accomplished anything.
Not a damn thing.
You will have not only ruined your own life, probably the life of your family, but you will make the firearms community look bad in the process.
Yep. Makes us all, every time something like this happens, every time there's some otherwise fine, upstanding citizen makes one little mistake, and or whether it's a mistake or do it on purpose, either one, it makes every one of us look bad. I mean, you get one guy that does something wild and crazy and stupid out there, and all of a sudden every gun owner in the country is just like him.
And, you know, this is not to suggest that there are not some good folks in government, but everyone here knows that there are elements of the government just looking to hang someone on a firearms charge.
Yeah.
And when I read these stories, like the fella arrested in Massachusetts, or many other stories I've seen over the years, it's like you're making it easy for them. You're playing their game. You need mm-hmm. to, you know, we need to learn to play our own game.
Yeah, there needs to be that game needs to be reversed in such a manner that we can, you know, and there, I've had a story about that very thing, about kind of reversing that. I'll, if we have time to talk about it, you know, when we get done, I will. If not, I'll talk about it Friday briefly, but I think we should be able to reverse that tactic on them. I'm not sure exactly how we'd go about it other than just putting out information, but...
Well, another aspect of this paradigm relates directly to something you do, which is training. In the pre-show conversation we had on this topic, I pointed out that if you have good tactics and good training in a, you know, Red Dawn type scenario, if you only had a break open 12 gauge shotgun, but you employed adequate training, adequate tactics, you could use that break open 12 gauge shotgun to get virtually any weapon you needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a great story out there that Mike Vanderbo wrote, and I might read it on the air here again. I haven't read it for several years, so. It was called "What Good Is a Handgun Against an Army?" And that's where I know you're familiar with the Liberator 45 ACPs.
Right.
Single shot, no extractor, no nothing. It came with a little wooden rod that you push in the barrel to push the single shot out of it. We made them for about a dollar a piece and dropped them into the French Resistance. And they would take that gun and go up and ask a German soldier for a light or a cigarette, and poke him with that Liberator and take his rifle and his handgun and his bandolier of ammo and his cigarettes. And now, after they do that four or five times, now we can go get a convoy of other stuff. So this was all done with single shot 45s.
Yeah, and there's another aspect to this too, which initially it's going to sound like I'm refuting what I just said, but I'm not. I'm talking about a spirit of protest. If we take the man in Massachusetts, I read a lot of posts on the thread in that forum, and a lot of people, A, had no sympathy for him, were accusing him of being a dumbass and not researching the laws, and there's an element of truth in that. But I was dismayed by the general attitude. And I want to compare that to the civil rights struggles of African Americans in this country. You know, people like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King Jr. I am not a huge fan of that civil rights movement in all respects. I think a lot of it was overboard. I think there was, in fact, a lot of leftist and communist infiltration. But the point I want to make is that the arrests, the various travails those people went through, they weren't met with ridicule from their community. They receive support from their community. So when you've got guys like this unfortunate fellow in Massachusetts who was arrested on these unconstitutional charges, yeah, you can castigate him for not having done his homework, but really people like that ought to receive more support. They ought to generate letters to the editor, complaints to your congressman, complaints to the various police agencies that he was the victim of an unjust law.
Yeah, if we'd get more of that in and in the courtroom too, if people would understand the power of jury nullification in a lot of these laws, when people go up against the state for some of this stuff, all the jury has to do is say, you know what, this law sucks, and we can't convict him, or we can't do this on this law, so you need to just throw it out. And if enough of us would do that, if we could get jury nullification to be a standard out there in cases like that, we could start turning this stuff around at some point.
And I think we are seeing positive signs of that sort of revolutionary fervor that's just beginning. I think the Trump phenomena is one aspect of it. I think the recent Brexit vote in the UK is one aspect of it. I think the fact that Merkel is getting trounced in Germany and the Germans are finally rising up against their insane liberal policies is a part of it. So, you know, we're at the beginning of a wave now where I think more people are aware of individual liberties and are taking them much more seriously and rejecting the paradigm of the all-knowing and all-powerful state.
Right. As long as you don't grow a garden in your front yard. Did you hear that first?
No, you dropped that on me.
Oh, I said as long as you don't grow a garden in your front yard. I don't know if you heard that part of the show earlier.
Yes, I did. Another example of ridiculous overreaching state power.
I don't know how the neighbors around there can even stand around and watch that happen without getting involved in that. Because if it happens to your neighbor across the street, you know it's something. You're going to do something sooner or later that's going to happen to you, and that's where jury nullification could come into play.
Absolutely. But as you know, there is an element of society that revels in and takes comfort in the overarching state power.
Yep,
they support that. We saw that throughout the post-World War II era until, you know, very recently. I think now there's a growing revulsion against that, and we're seeing people more and more stand up for themselves, stand up for their local areas, stand up for their country. The rising wave of nationalism we see is a reflection of that, and I think it's a healthy phenomena.
Well, we're seeing more of it for sure, and it's encouraging to see the things and read the stories that are starting to go around. It was, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, we didn't see nearly the number of things that we're starting to see fairly regularly now, like you said. And I like it. I like to see that. And I'm not going to tell you that the Bundy deal and maybe even Anthony Bosworth, some of the things that, and those two things there, and Lavoie Finicum being murdered. Some of those things, I think those three things right there have quite an effect, at least on people here in the States.
Sure. Yeah, of course they do. And I'm not taking anything away from them. I think people need to look at the long game a little more than those of us on the right have historically done.
Yeah.
So when, you know, and another thing I'm sure you're very well aware of, in any sort of conservative, right-wing, libertarian, Christian political movement or circles, you're always going to have these infiltrators.
Yeah.
So whenever somebody starts to talk to you about illegal weapons or like Randy Weaver sawing off a barrel or making pipe bombs or doing anything like that, it should set off the alarm bells. And the first thing you should think of is undercover agent.
Yeah. Yeah, there was with a group in Albuquerque one time. We got a brand new guy in, and the first day, first words out of his mouth. Of course, they've learned a lot since then too, but this was back in the 90s. But one of the first things after he got into the group was talking about, you know, I can do this and I can do that and I can get these kind of weapons and all that stuff. What do you want? And the guy, the leader right then, just picked up the phone right then, called the FBI, said, come get this idiot. We know who he is.
Exactly.
But I think they've become substantially smarter than that, and that was evidenced by the setup of Bill Keebler up in Utah, where three of his most trusted guys had been with him for over a year. Two of them turned out to be federal agents, and the other one was an informant.
Right. And, you know, I want to go back to what I touched on earlier, which is training, and that's your forte. One of the last categories of weapons that are likely to be banned are historical black powder weapons.
Yeah.
So let's say we arrive at a place where legally you can't own modern weapons or semi-automatic pistols. Okay. Well, you probably shouldn't keep one, even hidden, in your house, especially if you have any sort of a high profile. But let's look at one of my favorite historical pistols, or revolvers, the 1858 Remington, mm-hmm. 44 black powder. Even by contemporary standards, that is a very effective piece of machinery.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. If it wasn't for the speed or lack of in reloading and whatnot, there wouldn't be a thing in the world wrong with that. But it still beats a pocket full of rocks by anybody's standards.
So if you exactly. So if you God forbid, arrive at a place where the semi-automatic pistol becomes illegal, but revolvers are still legal, then, by God, you should train yourself on revolvers to be the best possible shootist you can be with revolvers.
Right. C7, black powder is also one of the great things that Doc's talking about there, is the ease of making your own black powder. It's really not difficult to do with pretty common stuff. So that would be a plus for sticking back a smoke pole or two. If black powder was not available, then you might even take the recipe and some of those components and put it back just for hard time. And I've said the same about high-powered air guns, too.
And, Cope, how long have you been a firearms trainer?
I started doing it professionally for money in 95, I think it was. Yeah, I think it was 1995.
And how many students do you think have passed through your course of instruction since then?
Probably 4,000.
Okay, obviously I'm setting you up for my next observation or question. But let's take a couple of different shooters and a couple of different weapons. So we'll take a newbie, somebody who is untrained and relatively clueless, with a new fourth-generation Glock. And compare that person to a very good, experienced, well-trained shooter with an old Smith & Wesson Model 10 and 38 Special. Who do you think is a more dangerous opponent?
Oh, certainly the more trained guy with the revolver, the more trained guy with a single shot.
Yeah, sure. So you don't really have technical solutions for training issues in most cases.
Right.
And that's what we tend to do in the firearms community, is concentrate on the hardware and not the training, when, of course, you know, it should be the exact opposite.
Yeah, and that's as bad as I hate to give any accolades to Front Sight. That was one of their, that's their motto, is any weapon will do if you will do. And I have to agree with that.
Well, I'm sure you've heard me say this countless times. I always say it's 95% shooter and 5% gun.
Yeah. Yep. There's, you know, those of us that have the ability to just pick up anything they find on the ground and make it work and do well with it are going to vastly exceed the guy that picks something up, then it takes him 15 minutes to figure it out and not know how to use it.
So I guess I've been long-winded enough on the topic tonight. I just wanted to I was thinking about that story I read about the poor fellow who was arrested in Massachusetts, and then some of your observations tonight about improvised explosives and bombs and such. And I just thought, you know, because I've heard chatter like this throughout my life about the illegal weapons. I've seen any number of people get arrested. Then I just thought it was worth bringing up so that our little group of listeners doesn't get taken down over something stupid like that.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it was a timely topic, and like just to reiterate, you know, what we've talked about before, I don't see any practical usage for having anything like that. I really don't. I can't see that when you talk about that risk versus reward, there is no reward big enough for that big of a risk in having a full auto or something put away for hard times. I just not only the risk of getting caught with it, but you know, having to have the amount of ammo to keep it running and everything else, they just don't appeal to me. I've never had the attraction to those things that some people have.
Now in chat, Kilogram just said it's a restriction on our rights. And Kilo, I want you to understand, I agree with you. I'm on your side.
Yeah, we're not That's saying not you shouldn't have them. We're just saying you shouldn't hide them when they're illegal.
You know, that's not the point we're debating. I think everyone agrees that it's a restriction on our rights. It shouldn't be. But I don't want to see folks in what we might call our side giving the other side ammunition to throw them in jail for no good reason.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, the enemies of freedom play a very smart long game, and we have to counter that by playing our own smart long game.
Yeah. Can't argue with that a bit. So, and so, Kilogram, we're with you 100%. But just while they do remain illegal, we're just suggesting that you don't go out and acquire one and hide it and expect to, dig it up when the balloon goes up and do something great and heroic with it.
Well, Cope, I just wanted to get that off my chest, so I think we've kind of worn that subject out for the evening. I will bid you an early adieu, and you've got 10 minutes, I guess, to wrap up the rest of your show, unless there's something else you would like me to add.
No, I think we've pretty well run its course, so we'll pick out another one here in another week or two and do it again. Always good to have
you
on here, Doc. I appreciate it.
I'll talk to you soon. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. All right, there you go. Always love to have Doc on. He's a pretty sharp cookie when it comes to this kind of stuff. So, Kilogram, I think I saw earlier up there where you said somebody had, your granddad or somebody had a 410 that shot 357. He probably had a 410 that shot 45s. The 410 will not shoot a 357 unless you have a chamber adapter for it that will chamber a 357. You can, however, put a 45 Colt in a 410 shotgun. I don't think it's probably the smartest, greatest thing to do, but people do it and have done it for many years. Along the lines of what Doc was talking about there, since we're kind of in that mindset right now, having the revolver, and I have taken and put one away just for that reason. If things get to a point where manufacturing is shut down, not for my sake, because I have, you know, even if manufacturing did shut, I have enough to last my lifetime, even if I was able to live a natural, you know, life for another, you know, 25 or 30 years. I can get by a good while. But for my kids' sake, I have a couple of revolvers put away, single action and a double action. And if it gets to a point where there's no magazines available anymore, and we have to get a little more basic, then I think having a revolver and knowing how to use it, and you know, and a lot of the guns that I have put away like that, I try to always, if I know it's going to be a long-term storage thing, I put in an owner's manual, a user's manual, a little bit of cleaning stuff, some ammunition, a holster or a scabbard or something to carry it in, and the means to reseal the container, you know, properly. And you know, we may or may not ever get to that point. You know, I may be really sorry that for, you know, the last 20 years there's been a couple or three, four or five guns put away that I haven't had the pleasure. I've cheated myself out of the fun of going out and fondling them and playing with them. And but on the other hand, risk versus reward again, if it does happen, I'm going to be exceedingly delighted that I have put those things away and held on to them like that. No. Anyway. All right. There was another story that kind of a little bit went along with what we had talked about earlier there as far as reversing the tactics on the other side. And about the only way we can do that in any legal manner is with information. And I have a little tidbit of information here that would work just for that. You know, we've talked, I don't know how many times over the years, about people, law enforcement that has left guns laying somewhere, left them, you know, laying on the hood, drove off and left them, fell off the trunk of the car, left them in bathrooms. You know, had them taken away from them, they got robbed out of their, you know, stolen out of their car, or whatever the case may be. There's been many, many, many times we've talked about this over the last, you know, 10 years. And it comes, the story here, it's earlier in the year, but it, between October of 2012 and April of 2015, that is what, two and a half years thereabouts, the Department of Homeland Security has lost 165 firearms and 1,300 badges and credentials in 2.5 years. Now that's just the Department of Homeland Security. Of course, there's quite a few agencies in the Department of Homeland Security also, but it doesn't include all federal law enforcement. It doesn't include any state, county, or local law enforcement. And I know that it happens in every, not that, you know, it happens to lots of people, and not that they're, you know, that they're that it's only happened to law enforcement, but it happens to lots and lots of people. The fortunately, I count myself lucky that I haven't ever left one laying anywhere or anything like that. But you know, I've still got a few years left to live, so I'm hoping that I can maintain that record. And I know lots of people that never have, but I also know lots of, well, I did, you know, one time I lost one, but I realized it and went back and got it. And that was back when I was kind of new to carrying a handgun fairly regularly. I was in a state that didn't allow it. It was in Texas, and it didn't allow you to do to carry them out on the street and everything all the time. And open carry is long before Texas concealed carry law came about. But you could wear one when you were hunting. So I had a stainless steel Ruger Single Six in a Western-style holster, and had it unsnapped, and I sat down there under it. We was hunting squirrels, and I had also a little .22 rifle. yeah, mountain shooter. No, that's not the one I'm talking about, but I'll mention that in a minute since you brought it up. I forgot about that one. And I sat down with my back up against a tree, sat on the ground with my back up against a tree, and raised my knees up. So when you do that, when you're carrying that kind of a holster, of course, the top of the holster is rather pointing downwards. And, you know, sitting in soft pine needles and stuff, and that gun just kind of slid out easily. One, you know, we sat there for, you know, an hour or so. And I got up and walked all the way back to the truck and got back there and realized I didn't have my gun. So I turned around and walked back and found, of course, I found it. It was only, you know, 200 yards to the truck, so it wasn't that big of a deal. The one that Mountain Shooter's talking about, I was on my way to a gun. It was when I was living down in Luna, and I was on my way to a gun show in Albuquerque, and the had all of our guns, all of our stuff that we were going to sell in this pickup bed trailer behind the truck, and it was pretty full of stuff, and we got about 50, 60 miles away from Luna. And I looked in my rearview mirror and I see this cardboard box sliding down the road, following us. And I looked farther back and there's another one. I said, oh, hell. Well, what had happened was that bed had moved around a little bit, an old trailer, and the tailgate had fallen off of it. And stuff was just dribbling out of the back. And it turns out that we'd lost about 7 brand new rifles. None of them were dinged up. The boxes protected all of them. Scrubbed them up a little bit. But none of the boxes came open. So that wasn't the worst part of it. The worst part of it was that I had 12,000 worth of custom Glocks in one case. And I couldn't find it. And we drove up and down the road slow and easy, leaning out there, looking over the edge, and never did find it. I went all the way back to the house to make sure that I hadn't left it at the house when we left. Of course, all this cost us about 4 hours of getting to Albuquerque. Couldn't find it. While I was at the house, I got a call from the sheriff's department. And I knew the sheriff and the chief deputy there. And he said, Cope, I think I got something here that you might be looking for. Right away, I was sure that was what it was. And I said, yeah, I'll be down there in a minute. Actually, it was more than a minute. It was about 30 miles to where I was going. But I got down there, and there was a lady that worked at the bank that we were banking at the time. She was the one that found it. Now, it was in a... Well, let me finish telling that part. She was the one that found it. She was mad, actually. We'd passed her going one way. She was going the opposite direction. And that case dropped out of the back of the truck, bounced over the top of her car, right in line with her windshield. It bounced probably like 5.5 feet, 5.5, 6 feet, went over the top of her windshield, missed her windshield. She was so pissed. She was scared to death that whatever it was going to go through the windshield. And she admitted that she, whatever it was, that she thought about just getting it and keeping it, being just out of spite. And then she opened it and saw what it was in it, and it scared her to death. So... She turned it into the sheriff's department, and they called me. They knew right away where they'd come from. And anyway, I went down to the bank to talk to her, and she's the one that told me the whole story about the sheriff's department didn't know all of it that happened. She told me the whole story about it bouncing over the car and everything. And she was real nice about it. You know, she cooled off. She wasn't mad anymore. And she was glad that we got them back and everything. I was glad we got them back. Thank you very much. I still have that case today. I have it in there on top of wardrobe. And there's it's scarred up on the bottom where it hit the pavement. That case never came open, protected the guns, didn't hurt them a bit. If you're going to buy a handgun case or a rifle case, as far as that goes, Doskosil is my case of choice. It has damn sure proven itself as being as tough as, more than, tougher than is necessary for average use. If you have some idiot that puts it in the back of a trailer and the tailgate falls off, needless to say, from that point forward, never again have I put that case with my Glocks in a trailer or even in the back of the truck. I either lock it in the toolbox or it rides behind the seat in the truck with me. No more trailer carry for my Glocks. That was I had resigned myself to the fact that they were gone. Somebody picked it up. And I'd never see him again. I was going to try to make all the gun shows and all that stuff, and see if I could ever find at least one of them again at some point. But thankfully, this lady was honest and all that, and then I managed to get all my stuff back. So there are still honest people out there that think more about other people than themselves, and that was a very good thing in that case. So, all right. Well, let me get back here and look at this. We were on that story about the losing the firearms there. So, it breaks down to, I said there was 165 firearms, 1,300 badges and credentials. Anonymous 6314, I would not. If I did that, there is no way in the world I would keep that. I would insist that if I had no identifying stuff on that to refer to, then I would and I probably wouldn't give it to the sheriff's department either. What I would probably done is give the information to the sheriff's department and say, I have this. If someone can give me some idea what's in it and prove it to me, then it's theirs. There is no way in the world I would keep that one. 165 firearms and 1,300 badges. That breaks down to a little over 5 firearms and 419 badges and credentials lost or stolen each month. The biggest offender was the sub-agency, Customs and Border Protection, which lost about half of the missing firearms and 900 of the badges and credentials. They lost 900 out of 1,300 badges and credentials. ICE lost 300 badges and credentials, and most of the remainder of the missing guns. So we got two departments responsible for the overwhelming majority of this stuff. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services lost 200 badges. A few more guns were reported stolen or lost by TSA. Now, we know that for those of you that listen to the radio, to the shooting bench, we talked about two different TSA agents that left their guns laying. One of them was a female in Atlanta, left her gun laying on the floor beside the toilet in the bathroom, and a passenger found it. Most embarrassing, I think. 31 of the total firearms were classified as lost, and all but 2 of the rest were listed as stolen. This may be inaccurate, however, as law enforcement officers tend to report firearms as stolen when they are in fact lost. Well, of course they would. Believe it or not, these numbers are an improvement over previous years, as the DHS previously reported 289 firearms lost or stolen in a 2010 report over a similar time period. So there you go. There's your federal tax money at work there. We're buying new guns regularly for DHS. All right. Well, I'm going to start thinking about getting out of here. remind you, hey, Radio Doc, I think Radio Doc may have parted company here. C7 and Radio Doc, we need to see if we can get a couple of classes lined up in that neck of the woods and see if we can get up there. And after I got my storage room cleaned out and my mother moved away from there and everything else, I need to get back up there and see some of my friends now. So we'll see if we can arrange to get a class going or two going up there and go up there and spend a good long weekend. That would be a lot of fun. All right. Other than that, we've got get things pointed in the right direction here so I can sneak out of here fairly seamlessly without making too much of a mess of everybody's stuff. By the way, I don't know what everybody's thoughts are on this deal I was talking about, having 1,000 radio shows on a flash drive. But let me know how, if some of you think that might be appealing to you. I'm thinking about charging $100 for it. If you look at the cost of some of the CDs and stuff we've had in the past with shows on them, that would be a hell of a bargain at 10 cents a show. So I'm experimenting with it. I got them all on there. I want to make sure that everything runs okay and looks okay and that they are cataloged and in order so that you can just look at it on your, of course, if you plug it in your car into one of your little deals there, then of course you wouldn't have any way of being able to tell. But if you put it in a computer, you should be able to see the names and dates of all those shows and pick out a certain show that you might want to listen to instead of just listening to them in order as they go. Another thing you could do is put those all on there and get a screenshot or take a picture of the menu and just have it with you if you're in a vehicle where you can't see everything that's on there, so you can kind of skip through and find the shows that you're looking for. Just something I was tossing around here and see if anybody thought that would be a good idea. All right, C7, I'm glad you could join us here. We don't see you as often as we'd like to here anymore, but anyway. All right, well, I'm going to boot scoot boogie on out of here, and we will see you guys Friday. 3 hours to an hour of Shooting Bench and 2 hours of Liberty Lounge. So good night. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me. No reconciliation. No, let's talk it out.